Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please help us out by leaving us a 5-star review and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hevitz.
Hey, 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 what do you say? Welcome back to the Is This Legal podcast. My name is Colin McCallan. Sitting right next to me is my partner, Russell Hevitz. Say hi, Russ.
Hello, everyone out there. Good to be back.
Yes, happy Friday to you all. We're releasing this on a Friday. And today we are going to do a podcast that's focusing on the police. Specifically, we've heard a lot of terms about defund the police, police reform. Where does policing go in the future? We're going to talk about those things.
And we're going to give you our perspective as criminal defense attorneys and as people who are really intimately involved in the criminal justice system.
Absolutely. So, but we're going to, I think, use a model for our discussion here. We thought it might be better if we could find a police agency somewhere in the country that's definitely experiencing these issues, that definitely may, you know, you've heard about them in public. Maybe we need some reform for a particular police agency. Did we find one, Russ?
We found one, and we didn't even have to look far. Just outside of Denver, to the east, is a city called Aurora. Aurora may not be well known nationally, but it's a big city. It's the third largest city in the state of Colorado. And has a big police department.
It also has a very large minority population. A lot of African Americans, a lot of Latinos, a lot of those live in Aurora, and that's going to be a segue to what we're talking about. If you've heard of the Aurora Police Department and you're not from Colorado, there might be a reason for that. Aurora Police has been in the news big time over the last year.
And it's not a good thing.
No, it's not good stuff. In fact, we're going to do kind of a quick recap of some of the incidents that the Aurora Police has had to deal with. And we're going to follow up with a discussion about where the Aurora Police Department and other similarly situated police departments, where they can go, where they can make good changes, where they can earn back the trust of their constituents.
Right, where there is room for effective police reform. Okay. So let's start, Colin. Start us off with what has been going on with the Aurora Police Department in the last 12 months?
Well, it's a list here. We're going to cover it. But one of the more high-profile incidents was about a year ago, August 24, 2019. A young black man, 23 years old, by the name of Elijah McClain, was purchasing a beverage to bring it to his brother. He was walking home. He was contacted by the Aurora Police Department for unknown reasons. He was not breaking the law. Somehow, he ends up in a chokehold by one of these officers that caused him to stop breathing. Paramedics were called. Paramedics gave him a dose of something called ketamine, which was supposed to help him or gain his consciousness back. It ended up triggering a heart attack, and that poor young man died. Initially, the district attorney who was reviewing the case decided that there was no criminal liability on the part of the police officers. That investigation has restarted. It's being looked at. There's a federal investigation actually going on into that death. That's one of the more higher profile ones. But Russ, that's just the beginning, right?
Yes. So leapfrogging right along with Elijah McClain, the actual death. Officers, about 2 weeks later, went by the site of that arrest and they took photos with the officers imitating a chokehold on each other and then sent those to other officers in Aurora Police Department.
Wow. And those photos made it to the public eye, didn't they?
They eventually made it to the public eye, and there were firings that came out of that.
Yeah, so the three officers who posed for the chokehold selfies at the scene where this poor kid died, those three officers were fired. They're appealing their firings. They sent it to one of the officers who was actually involved in this kid's death. That officer responded, ha ha, he was fired for making that response.
The only guy that came out unscathed was there was another officer at the scene who they sent it to who didn't respond at all.
Right.
And that officer still has his job, at least pending the investigation.
Yep. There's more. On October 10th of 2019, one of the officers shot a man through the front window of the man's home, despite not knocking and announcing that they were police officers in violation of protocol. What's next?
So next, on December 10th, this one actually made at least local news.
No, it made national news.
Did
too.
It?
Yeah.
Okay. So this was the incident where a fully uniformed, on-duty Aurora officer was completely unresponsive in his car, passed out drunk. Officers responded. They did not do a DUI investigation. They instead took him to the hospital. He needed to go to the hospital because he was so intoxicated.
BAC 0.454.
Oh, and that, for anyone who does not know the BAC levels, like 0.08 in virtually every state is DUI. So you're talking about an incredibly high amount of alcohol, and frankly, you can't get to that level of alcohol unless you're a pro. So what's next?
Well, that cop is still on the job.
Oh, yeah, right.
He wasn't fired, and he wasn't prosecuted.
Well, but Colin, to be fair, he got demoted.
Next, 6 days later, a former officer was sentenced to jail for stealing from the police nonprofit while still working with the Aurora Police Department.
That's a lovely way to go out. So on January 13th, an Aurora police officer pled guilty to driving under the influence and prohibited use of the weapon. Basically, he had a gun while he was drunk.
On April 6th, the department fired an officer after he drove drunk through a Colorado Springs neighborhood. Separate incidents.
And that's a great one because he tried pulling rank in Colorado Springs. He said, hey, come on, give me a break. I'm a fellow officer here.
He was a sergeant, too.
And yeah, no, he didn't get any good treatment there. Then on June 15th, another officer is fired for drunkenly crashing his car.
Yep. Then June 27th, back to Elijah McClain, there were people who were protesting his death here in 2020 with a violin ritual because Elijah McClain was a violinist.
Well,
and
who knows?
Police shows up and use batons and pepper spray against these peaceful protesters.
You know, violins can be very dangerous. You can get a bow in the eye really easily. So July 17th, so now we're almost up to current day. Public records revealed that an officer who was fired in February had left a restrained woman on the floor of his patrol car for 21 minutes despite her pleas that she could not breathe.
Yeah. So these are just in the last year. This is the last 12 months for one police department. Also worth mentioning, these guys just appointed themselves a new chief. Just this Monday, three days ago. What day is this? 5 days ago. this new chief took the job. She was not an external candidate. She's someone who came up through the rank and file of the police agency. So
this is just a great example of why so many people in this country are screaming for police reform.
Right. This is one police department. This is one police department that's having these issues. And so let's look at this, though, from a constructive standpoint, Russ. I mean, if we are trying to see if we can suggest better ways for this agency to repair some of the damage it's caused in the community, I'd like to talk about that. But first, before we get there, a phrase that we've been hearing a lot of in the last few weeks is defund the police. Let's talk about that, because it has a lot of different meanings, right, Russ?
It can have different meanings, and really, there's a lot of political spin to it, right? Depending on who you're listening to, they give different meanings. Ultimately, what defund the police means by the people who are actually the defund the police advocates, it means reallocate funding away from police departments and into other government agencies. So the technical defund the police does not include that group of people who are essentially police abolitionists.
Right.
Right, so that is different than defunding the police.
And that's really not what we're going to be talking about, because we don't believe that it's practical or realistic that anytime soon police agencies across the country are just going to be completely disbanded, where we're not going to have any police or first responders.
Yeah, I think you and I are in agreement that that makes no sense, and that that would be a bad idea for society.
When we say defund the police, at least as it pertains to Russ and I, we're not talking about abolishing the police. We're basically talking about reallocation of police resources and, you know, possible ways that these police agencies can reform themselves.
And it's interesting, like that term, it grabs a lot of attention nationally, so you can see why people would use it, but it's so easy to misconstrue that, because it is not about abolishing the police. Even if you're talking about abolishing the police, like Camden, New Jersey is a good example. A decade ago, they did just completely defund their police department. They dissolved the police union, but then they put in a new police department.
Okay, so right? They kind of built it from the ground up.
They built it from the ground up, so you're not talking about a vacuum.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but you're focusing on eradicating some of those institutional problems that, you know, that Camden dealt with for a long time.
Exactly. So what are some ways that we can reform police in America? We can reform agencies like Aurora PD to make them better.
Let's start with training. This is one that comes up a lot. And there's a lot of studies and position papers that have been put forth on different reforms that the police can use. We are focusing on some of the ones that we really think are good ideas that could lead to positive changes. And let's talk about police training. The problem that we start with, that I see, is most police training is focused on four areas, very, very heavily. Firearm skills, self-defense training, health and fitness, according to statistics I read, and driving, how to drive in high-speed situations, all that kind of stuff. That's like 80 to 85% of police training in the academy is based on those four areas.
And ultimately, they're looking at, like, they're just really focused on use of force and worst case scenarios to reduce threats, and mostly to reduce threats to themselves or to the public, right? So they're not dealing with, so that's what they're trained on, but you know what they get called on, Colin? First of all, about 50% of their calls are non-criminal matters.
Okay.
So you're talking about half of the calls are not criminal. 9 out of 10 calls do not involve violence.
Okay.
So you're talking about things like people are calling the police department because there's a cat stuck in a tree, or there's a pothole in front of their street.
Or there's a suspicious looking person who's loitering on my sidewalk. But
Well, here's
no criminal activity there.
Right, exactly. And that's a good example, because a lot of their calls go to three areas. They are mental health. So, hey, there's a crazy person talking to themselves on the street. It goes to drug use. Hey, there's a junkie downtown.
All right.
That's, you know, not, that needs to be taken care of. And homelessness. So they get calls on, I mean, in Denver, we're having a huge issue with these homeless encampments, especially given COVID. We're not going to go into, that would be its own podcast. But those are three main areas that police are getting calls. And those are three main areas that people who are advocates of defunding the police or reallocating police funds want to reallocate funds to.
Right. And so what does this have to do with training? Well, the police have much, much more limited training with regard to de-escalation and mediation techniques. They have much less training when it comes to dealing with the mentally ill. And they also have, they don't have as much training as I'd like to see with regard to use of non-lethal force with, you know,
it, right.
I think they have so much emphasis on deadly force. And it's not to say, of course, that they need to be trained on firearms and use of deadly force and things like that. The problem is I think it's when it's so much more training in those areas and not as much in the areas where they're likely to have much more interaction with the
right.
public. That's a problem in training, isn't it?
That's a huge problem in training. And also, you know, an area that is almost completely ignored is, you know, de-escalation and mental health for assessing other people. But there is almost nothing on officer mental health.
Right.
Like, these officers are in super high stress
situations.
Especially
now. Can you imagine being a police officer right now?
Right.
A patrol officer?
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll get into that, right, like, when we talk about, you know, officer recruitment, which is coming up. But, you know, the point is, if agencies put more money into that kind of training and even taking care of themselves so that they're in a better state of mind when they go out there on patrol, it's good for everyone.
Right. And those latter categories that we talked about, like de-escalation, mental health training, all of those are kind of in that term community policing. You may have heard that term before, but there is definitely a shift, a movement encouraging community policing, where that's where the police officers are visible in their communities. Often they're walking around on foot, not to investigate crime, not to hassle people, just to interact with their community. And there are studies that show that that type of police approach really has positive returns in the community. So we would like to see more of an emphasis on community policing as opposed to reactionary
right.
police situations, you know?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, like, I personally am, I think that the police themselves would love to not have to handle mental health calls.
Oh, yeah.
I think they would love to not have to handle there's an alcoholic, there's a homeless drunk guy
right.
who's just harassing passerbys.
Exactly.
You know,
who wants to deal with that person?
Right, exactly. You know, who should, it's social workers who are trained for that.
Right.
Who are, you know, that's their calling and they want to go and they want to try to help them. So if that can be shifted, I think the police would be way happier, the homeless guy would get more services. I think it's a win all around.
Now let's kind of go to the next category of reform that we have identified, and it relates to the recruiting. You know, how does a police agency recruit effective, high caliber officers?
I think it's just Craigslist, right?
That would be really sad if it were. Maybe that's true in some smaller jurisdictions. But, you know, let's talk about one. Should a police officer have a college degree? Before we answer that question, here's the reality. The numbers that I saw, anywhere from a third to 50% of police officers in this country have some sort of college degree, whether that's associate's or a four-year degree. And one thing that I've seen in literature is, I don't know if there's a movement where we should just hire people who have a college degree. But I will say this, in 2015, the Journal of Criminal Justice Education looked at education in the police department ranks. And one finding that they found was police officers with college degrees are less likely to use force against citizens and are also less likely to be the subject of a citizen complaint than officers who do not have a college degree.
That is a really interesting statistic. And that's something that, you know, it's obviously every different agency is going to have a different potential pool of candidates, and they're not, some are going to have more options than others. But you go back to, this made the news years ago, it was in 2000, but do you remember the case where the guy in Connecticut took the assessment test for, I think it was the state patrol, but it was law enforcement in Connecticut. He scored too high. He was denied the job. They said, sorry, you're too smart for this job.
Wow. And I did not hear about that. That's amazing.
He took that all the way up to the Connecticut Supreme Court, who ultimately said, sorry, we're going to find that that's an okay criteria, because the reason why is they said people get bored if they're too smart being a cop.
That is bizarre to me. Now, you know, there's maybe it's too aggressive an approach to say, hey, you guys got to start hiring people with college degrees or advanced degrees. But one thing, you might be able to incentivize that if you're a police department. Look at what the U.S. military does. U.S. military, if you enlist and you have a four-year degree, you're going to be on the fast track to become an officer. You know, you're going to rise up through the ranks faster than
right.
if you don't have a college degree. One paper that I read argued maybe police agencies should do the same thing. There should be a pay incentive if you have a college degree, or you'll get on a fast track to becoming a detective or a supervisor, something like that. That makes a lot of sense to me, where there's kind of an incentive-based criteria, but you still allow anybody who wants to be a police officer to become a police officer.
Right. I mean, think about it. Like, especially a lot of rural areas, you know, people may
right.
not have the options.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, and you wanna make sure you're open to everyone. But if you can, like, even something like giving them, you know, credit for education while on the force,
right? Specifically in the areas of social work, right, or mental health,
right?
You know, if you get additional training or have additional training, maybe that should be something that's incentivized by a police department.
I think any of those would be a great idea.
Now, the next reform that we're going to kind of talk about, I think, is the perfect segue to what we were just talking about with regard to, you know, recruitment of higher caliber officers. Russ, do you think that there, we often see, you know, these incidents on TV where a police officer gets caught doing a very bad thing. And, you know, we know what happens afterward. There's a statement by the police agency saying, oh, this should have never happened. We're looking into policy changes to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Is there a danger to having too much policy?
There's a huge danger to having too much policy. So, I mean, first, let me touch on the first half of what you said. You know, this publication and proliferation through social media of bad police actors, it's great to have that information out there, right? It's spurring change, and it is making a difference with some reforms that are really good-minded. However, when you see these publications of things, there are studies out there that show, like, when there's a high-profile police bad conduct, 911 calls in that community go down.
Interesting.
And it's because people just view police worse and they don't want to call police. That clearly would overflow into recruitment. So part of this is a vicious cycle where cops are acting badly, and that causes good people, heroes who want to go into the police force to do good, to not want to be associated.
Right.
Then you get more bad cops as candidates.
Right.
Then it causes more bad incidents, and it's a downward spiral. So that has to be broken.
Absolutely.
Somehow first.
Right.
Right? Right. That's a huge problem. But going back to where you were going, too much policy and red tape. You know, we do a lot of DUI cases, and we sit there and watch these body cams of the cops. So much of that is them filling out paperwork, right? And there are more and more protocols for everything. And, you know, a good example of this policy can be found from Aurora again.
we didn't even talk about this yet.
This is one we didn't talk about. So, Colin, lay out what happened just recently. This is another Aurora incident that just happened within the last, 2 weeks?
This happened Sunday. This happened 6 days ago. You may have heard about this because it went national. But what happened was a license plate reader, which is a device that is on a stoplight, scanned a license plate that was going through the intersection and identified as a stolen car.
Is that constitutional?
Yes.
All right, good. We've talked about this in other podcasts, and we're not going to go down that rabbit hole, but that is constitutional because it's a public place.
That's right. So the problem was, though, is these police officers actually never verified the information. The stolen plate belonged to a Montana motorcycle. The plate that went through the intersection was a family minivan. Inside the minivan.
Right, right. So let's clarify real quick. The number and the letter on the license plate were the same. It was the same license plate number and letter. It was just a Montana plate versus a Colorado plate, and the license plate reader does not distinguish between those two.
And so the problem is the police never verified to make sure this was actually the car. The car, of course, is full of an African-American family. There's a 6-year-old kid, a 12-year-old kid, 2 teenagers, and a mom. Police show up, do a high-risk felony stop on this vehicle, believing it to be stolen. A felony stop means they have their guns drawn. There's 5 officers. They order all of the occupants, including the 6-year-old boy, out of the car to lay down on the hot pavement. It was a 90-degree day. These people are laying down, screaming for help, while these officers are incorrectly investigating them as a stolen car. They realized that they made a mistake, they apologized, the department has issued an apology, and now they're bracing for what I'm sure is going to be a multi-million dollar lawsuit, because these poor kids were basically terrorized even for like 5 minutes by the police,
right,
at gunpoint.
Right, and the youngest was 6, but there were multiple children. I mean, it was it was like a 6, a 12, a 14. So these that kind of case right there is an example of where the officers followed protocol, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. Why? In a weird way, we're going to be talking about this, defending the actions of the police officers for just a second, because they followed their protocol. They had a stolen car hit. And what they are required to do, according to their police agency manual, they are supposed to conduct a high-risk stop at gunpoint for their safety.
Right, and it makes sense, because traditionally, like if you have auto theft, that's a high-risk suspect, and that is more likely to be armed, it's more likely to have a violent interaction. But so they followed their policy. Now they should have verified the car.
That was one thing they didn't do.
And that was where they screwed up.
Well,
right? And
they also should have never ordered these kids down at gunpoint on the ground.
Well, again, but that goes back to, are officers allowed to use their common sense? Because
right.
There has been a trend for decades towards more red tape, more bureaucracy, more paperwork, and less officer ability to observe the situation and make an appropriate decision based on common sense.
Well, and think about this. I mean, look at this from the standpoint of the officers involved in that incident. I'm sure they're sitting here saying, this is maddening. I mean, I followed my protocol. I did what I had to do to protect the situation. No one ended up getting hurt. And now you're yelling at me for doing my job. Now I'm getting scrutinized for not exerting my discretion. What discretion am I supposed to have here when I know that every single move I make is under a microscope?
Well, that's super frustrating for law enforcement. And that's the way it's been going. Like, typically, before any of this reform, and hopefully this changes, what would happen from this is someone would have gone into a standard operating procedure manual and said, okay, I'm going to add another paragraph under section 201AD 5.2 saying, if there's a minor children in the car, you can take a different action. And it's just absurd that it's gone to this level, because at some point you don't want stormtroopers.
Absolutely. We don't want automatons.
Right.
We're you know, the point that we're actually trying to make here is that, like, there really is such a thing as too much policy, too much red tape. We want our police officers to be critical thinkers, to be able to assess something in real time and make a decision kind of based on reason and common sense, not based on what
a book says. Colin, whatever happened to Andy Griffith?
Exactly.
So I have a great quick example of this.
He's the perfect example of a community policer, by the way.
Right.
I mean,
everyone knows him. He knows everyone. He uses his common sense.
He engages people in a friendly way.
Yeah.
He's a very likable character.
So
and an effective police officer.
Right. And very effective. So when I was, I had a friend when we were 12. He went out and stole wood from a construction site to build a skate ramp. Okay, didn't have permission to do this. It was theft of some lumber that was lying on the side of the street, okay. Right? He got caught. The cop talked to the people building the home. The cop brought him to his parents and said, I caught Steve using this wood. Are you going to take care of it? And his parents said, yes, I'm going to take care of this. And you know what? Steve didn't end up being a habitual criminal. That was the end of the story. What would happen if that happened today, Colin?
I don't think that would happen today.
No.
The kid would be arrested.
He would be charged. He would be brought to the police station and charged as a 12-year-old kid. He would go through juvenile court.
Yeah.
And it's a huge tax on our system and on our taxpayer money.
I agree. That's a really good example. All right, so guys, we're going to wrap up with kind of one more reform idea that you may have heard about lately. It's been in the news, but you know, this idea of transparency and accountability. We want more accountability for our police officers and our departments when they screw up. We want more transparency to know whether or not they are messing up.
Right.
And so listen to this statistic. This is pretty amazing to me. In Colorado, since 2014, there have been 309 deadly force investigations in Colorado. So where the police have used deadly force on a citizen, that happened 309 times since 2014. Of those 309 investigations, only two were found not to be justified. by either a grand jury or a district attorney that reviewed them. That is a rate of 99.4% of where deadly force was used.
Okay.
99.4% of them were considered to be justified. That is absurd. There's no way that's right. And let's look at the problem, Russ, because there is a problem here. Who investigates use of deadly force cases?
The district attorney in the jurisdiction that the police department lies in.
Okay. Now, you may hear that and you may think, oh, wait a minute. Okay, the DA's office, that's a separate entity. It's not part of the same force. Doesn't that matter, Russ?
No. I mean, both Colin, and maybe it should. Colin and I were both prosecutors, right? We both worked in prosecutors' offices.
Here in Colorado.
I can tell you that the DAs or prosecutors, I don't care where you are working with the police all the time. The police are the witnesses in your cases.
That's right.
You have to have a good relationship with the police because that's who you're working with. That's how you prove your cases.
Absolutely.
So the fact that that guy who is prosecuting, guy or girl who is prosecuting the cases, is also responsible for determining if their star witness, their next witness next week, their star witness from their last murder trial, mm-hmm. is guilty of using excessive force. It is a interested party, and it is not a fair assessment.
It's that the blue code. We've heard about that, right? The backing the blue.
Right.
And these DAs want to back their own law enforcement officers. So here's a possible solution to that. If the idea is we want more objectivity in these investigations, a very simple solution is the appointment of an independent prosecutor. So we have these things called prosecutors. So if a district attorney's office, for example, is prosecuting someone that they have a conflict of interest with, maybe one of their deputy DAs got in trouble.
Right.
They can't prosecute their own person. That case is going to be referred to a prosecutor from another county who's going to come in with fresh eyes and an independent basis to look at that and investigate it. The same should happen with an officer-involved shooting.
It's a simple solution. The process is already established.
Or another thing that some states have done, they appoint someone called an independent monitor.
Right.
An independent monitor, their sole job is basically to monitor the police. They receive complaints from the community about excessive force or complaints about really anything, any misconduct by the police. They can investigate those and bring charges if necessary. That's one thing it could do. One more, Russ, that I'd like you to set up for us is this idea of qualified immunity that police officers enjoy and whether or not they should enjoy that.
So here's what qualified immunity is. Qualified immunity is a law, and it basically says that you as a citizen cannot sue a public employee and get personal civil damages. So if you are treated badly by a police officer,
your constitutional rights have to be
right. Violated. Yeah, it's constitutional law violations. So your constitutional rights are violated by a police officer.
Wrongful arrest,
wrongful use of force,
whatever.
Death. Right.
Exactly.
Anything. The police officers or any government employee enjoys what's called qualified immunity, and that prevents them from being sued for civil damages. Colorado just recently passed the nation's first moratorium on qualified immunity. So Colorado said, you know what? In the wake of George Floyd, in the wake of what's been going on, we are going to essentially do away with qualified immunity. And if officers in Colorado knowingly, you still have to prove that they did something wrong knowingly, right? So it can't be an inadvertent mistake. It's not a strict
right.
liability standard. And if you don't know what a strict liability standard is, go back and listen to, but I didn't mean to kill anyone. Because we lay
episodes.
It all out. Yeah, previous podcast. But now people can sue that officer personally. So maybe the next time an officer is putting someone in a chokehold, he or she might think, the suspect is saying they can't breathe. I don't really want to be sued for my life savings, so maybe I'll go ahead and let them go and handcuff them instead.
Now, let me ask you this, though, Russ. Here's a problem that I see with the abolishment of qualified immunity. Isn't that going to disincentivize good police officers from wanting to join the force? I mean, if I'm thinking about becoming a police officer, and I find out that some mistake that I make may allow a person to come and sue me for everything I got, and, you know, look, I'm the police officer now. I'm on the defense in society right now. Everybody's pointing the finger at me. Do I even want to become a police officer anymore? Don't we go back to the same problem of how are we going to recruit good police officers if they are afraid to be sued and to do the right thing?
So here's the response to that. I think that's a valid concern, right? I think that's a valid concern. Here's the response. If you're doing the right thing, you're not going to get sued. This is not a standard that says anyone can sue you because you arrested them. It doesn't say you can sue them because your feelings were hurt. Right. It says you can sue them if you can prove your constitutional rights were violated and they were violated knowingly.
Well, I'll tell you what, and that's a good point, because we also have body cams more than we ever have before.
Yes.
I mean, just in the last 5 years, most departments in Colorado that we have seen are going to full use body cams.
Real quick, they were
resistant to adopt that. But I mean, talk about a way to protect yourself as a police officer. You document the entire interaction you have with a client. That's going to protect you if you're doing your job right.
And part of that same bill that removed qualified immunity requires body cam.
Good.
So now in Colorado, every police agency has to have body cam, and that should be national.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is so helpful. It's helpful across the board.
Absolutely.
Like, we're a couple of defense attorneys telling you that there should be body cam in every single case. It protects the police, it protects the public, and you don't have to rely.
It protects the client.
It protects everyone. Yep. So that's a huge reform that's already well on its way that is making a difference.
So, folks, I think we're going to wrap up there. There are a number of other police reforms that have been suggested by scholars and people who work with the police. We just wanted to cover some of the big ones. You know, it's really obviously a tough time to be a police officer out there, but at the same time, when we see these incidents over and over again, as a public, we're going to want more accountability and more oversight. So we'll continue to watch these issues as they unfold out. I'm gonna go fold out my laundry real quick.
I'm gonna go fold out these issues.
You all have a wonderful day. Of course, you can find us. Please communicate with us. We love to hear from you. Find us at our Twitter handle, which is IsThisLegalPod. You can find us at our Hebbets McAllen Facebook page. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think. If you have an idea for a future episode,
you can find short videos on YouTube or just Is This Legal TV.
We're all over the place. If you can't find us right now, the joke's on you.
Ubiquitous. Well, have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Bye bye.
You've been listening to Is This Legal. See you next time.